Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We have John Ziegler in with us, who does a podcast on SoundCloud called The World According to Zig. He also writes for Mediaite. He's a friend of the program and a guy who is truly tortured. He is a guy who doesn't want to believe something, doesn't want to be the standard bearer of this, but believes that a true injustice has been done to Jerry Sandusky and to the people of Pennsylvania through the Penn State scandal. He's been with us for the last couple of hours making a pretty compelling case. We just had one of the Board of Trustee members on from Penn State who said, thank God for John making this case because something is wrong. We have a little more information and your phone calls. We start there and cover so much more beginning right now. I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I remember I was not up and didn't follow. I was in the middle of the George Soros stuff when the Penn State scandal happened. But I remember, and I'm also not a sports fan, and I remember everybody on the team saying, this is incredible. That no, this can't be. This guy's one of the greatest guys ever. Then we saw him or heard him do a Bob Costas interview, and we immediately thought, that's not the way I would answer that. And I know how I feel about young men. So I think this guy's guilty of sin. Remember this moment.
Are you a pedophile?
No.
Are you sexually attracted to young boys, to underage boys?
Am I sexually attracted to underage boys? Sexually attracted? Okay. You know, I enjoy young people. I love to be around them. But no, I'm not sexually attracted.
Okay, so all of us would have immediately went, no,
of course not.
I like to be around kids, but I'm not sexually. And all of us immediately went, that sounds guilty.
Yeah.
John is here. He's laid out a case, has a whole case, and you can go back and listen to it on the podcast. We've spent the last 2 hours kind of making it. Why did he answer that way?
Well, it's a great question. Ironically, you know, I presume that Jerry Sandusky was guilty as hell when the story broke. That was the first moment that I thought, maybe he's innocent, because it was such a bad answer that a trained pedophile had gotten away with this for so long, couldn't possibly have given that answer. But there's another element to this, though, that's also important. And I'm glad that you guys played the first part of that. Are you a pedophile?
No.
In his mind, he's already put that aside.
Right. Now you've met with him in prison
for 6 hours.
For 6 hours,
alone. Well, and with his wife the second time.
Did he try anything?
Did you shower with him? That's the question. So, but you are absolutely convinced he is innocent.
100%, and it's not even close. And I realize it sounds insane. This is not a conspiracy theory. I despise conspiracy theories. I think everybody's guilty. I think humanity stinks. After all, I've worked in radio for a long time, so I know firsthand how bad humans are.
You think this is just the new American dream, is being able to sue somebody with a lot of money, i.e. Penn State?
That was part of the perfect storm here. There are so many elements to the perfect storm of this case. But this is something, as you've already alluded to, Glenn, I don't want to believe this, all right? I didn't want this. I don't even like Jerry. I mean, Jerry's a goofball. He's a weirdo. He's adult, but he's not a pedophile. And he's incredibly naive, and he's innocent. And it's obvious, if you look at the facts of the case, that's the most amazing part of this. It's not close.
Rick in California has been listening, and he has, I think, the number one question.
Sure, I want to hear it.
Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, guys. Glenn, we've been watching you for a long time. So
thank you.
Appreciate all you do, and we appreciate all the guys, especially you, Jeffy.
Oh, no.
Boo.
You just lost all credibility.
Out the window.
All right, go ahead. We'll you know, let you ask your question.
Of all the times to try to call in on the show, and this is when I get through, and I'm a former Pennsylvania guy. I grew up there. And, John, you know, so this is confirmation bias. John, I want to believe you. But the segment, Glenn, that you just shared almost addresses this maybe to some degree. But why is Sandusky not jumping up and down? If it were me, if I were in his shoes, and I don't even know what the heck that means, but if I were in his shoes, I can't imagine that I wouldn't be cursing the person out who even mentioned that to me if I accused.
And especially if I'm in jail, I would be screaming innocence.
Exactly. I don't understand. So I'm just curious, John, you know, what's your thought? Maybe he's weird. If he's that weird, what's he doing being a football coach? But if he's that odd, why is he not jumping up and down? And that last segment Glenn just played, I mean, right.
It's a great question, and I want to address it because this was a big issue for me. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, if this was me, I would be going bananas, right? There's a couple of things. First of all, people don't understand, and you got to put yourself in his position. Jerry is so naive.
Thanks, Rick.
Jerry is so naive that a week before the trial starts, he goes to his attorney and says, can I just meet with these guys and correct this misunderstanding? He loved these guys. So in order to defend himself, he would have had to have gone on a search and destroy mission for guys that he loved, who he did not think it was possible were going to betray him to the extent that they were. He thought to the moment of conviction, something was going to happen to fix this and to prove this. The second time I interviewed him in prison with his wife there, I asked what I thought was the most important question. Because I had been struggling with this. Why is there not more fight back? Why exactly is the caller is questioning? And I said, Jerry, when was the first moment, you thought this might not work out okay? Now, if you're guilty, there are 1,000 moments in this story. This was a very long investigation before we ever went to trial. If you're guilty, there's 1,000 moments where you go, well, you know.
If you're innocent and you're a strict God guy,
yes,
you don't think until the hammer comes down.
Bingo.
That's what he said?
So they thought God was going to save them, and Jerry, in chains, unable to even scratch his cheek, tears coming down his face, and he's not a crier, says, it was the moment of the verdicts. When I heard the moment of the verdicts, and then I turned to his wife, more tears, she says exactly the same thing. They thought God was going to save them.
Yep.
And it is, and then by the time
I would think so too. I mean, if I would take
still
it seriously,
put up a defense, no, you? I would,
no, no, he did. No, but, put a, well, see, that's what the yeah. There was a defense, and part of the reason he didn't testify at trial is that the very much against the media narrative. And it's important to point out there's no cameras in the courtroom in Pennsylvania, so the news media has a stranglehold over the narrative. All right?
Right.
In the real world, the trial went very well for the defense. The media never told you that, because that's not the story they wanted. But they thought this was a normal case. And they thought, well, we don't need to put you on because they haven't proven anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't realize we're in la-la land on this one. This is about emotion and politics and money.
There is no critical thinking anymore.
No.
That people that's do not really know sad. How to critically think anymore. Yeah. Let me go to Rick in Maryland. He's a retired detective. Hello, Rick. Go ahead.
Hey, Glenn, good to speak with you. And I do appreciate all this work that John's put into this case. But as a retired detective, I want to speak up on behalf of these victims, because a lot of the things that he was speaking with you about, you know, could a victim, you know, be cooking upstairs, I mean, the wife, and this happened. And,
sure.
And the fact that that occurred, I mean, that to me, you know, he's using these, and the recantation phenomenon as part of the basis of unbelief, and having investigated lots of hundreds of cases and interviewed thousands of victims, The whole grooming process, the secrecy, the recantation phenomenon, the guilt associated with these young boys, fear. Generally, they're not very trustworthy. They become liars and thieves. And there's just a phenomenon that occurs that I want him to take into account. Because
right. I kind of hit that with you, John, earlier. But I think Rick expresses it much clearer. And from a detective point of view, there's a lot going on that you got to give wide berth.
I get it. And I did for a long time. I presumed that this premise that this detective is talking about is universal. And that's why I presumed Sandusky to be guilty for the first 2 years of my investigation, where I was focused on my website is framingpaterno.com. It had nothing to do with Jerry Sandusky at the beginning. I thought Joe Paterno had clearly gotten a raw deal. But here's what the detective is articulating, in much the same way that you did earlier, is the foundation on which this injustice was built. Because everyone has accepted now a series of rules for evaluating these stories, which makes it impossible to defend yourself. And once Joe Paterno is fired, see, again, that's the key moment in this whole thing. It's why we perceived the Costas interview the way that we did. That happened a week before the Costas interview.
So
with the Paterno firing, you're now presuming he has to be guilty. And everyone has got the pitchforks and the torches out. And
And
when you look at each of these individual stories, I'm not talking about little inconsistencies. I'm talking about massive, huge credibility problems.
Give me one.
Oh. There's so many, but you know, since he mentioned the man who claims to have been raped in the basement while Dottie was upstairs baking cookies. Matt Lauer was in that basement. Matt Lauer was like, seriously? I mean, we're like from here to me to you, Glenn, with no installation and the kid's supposedly screaming. But here's the biggest problem. According to him, he was there the same weekends for several years as victim number one, Aaron Fisher, which is, first of all, logistically impossible, but they don't know each other. They've never met. The dates aren't possible because they're doubling down on the same time period. Not to mention, he comes forward after the Paterno firing. Everyone who comes forward after the Paterno firing knows Fort Knox is open.
Yeah.
Here's the key.
So there's 10 alleged victims, right? How many came after that?
At trial, this is a great question because this gets manipulated very badly by the media. Everyone always says 10. No. At trial, there were 8 people who testified, 6 of whom came forward before Paterno's firing. Of those 6, only 2 alleged actual sex acts of any sort. I'm not talking about Bill Clinton definition of sex. I'm talking about any definition of sex, period.
Okay, so what did the other 4 testify? The
grooming acts.
Like what?
He took a shower with me and rubbed soap on me or, you know, something, okay. something like that.
All right.
And by the way, 4 of those 6 are friends. And oh, by the way, the Pulitzer Prize winning reporter on this case, Sarah Ganim, now at CNN, had texted the mom of one of those 4 saying they're going to close the case unless we find more accusers. And then suddenly, shockingly, 3 of his buddies show up as accusers. So 4 of the 6 are all in the same photograph in Jerry Sandusky's book. Now, who puts a photograph of themselves with 4 of their victims in their book called Touched? It's insane. It's insane. And so, and the worst example, in the so-called victim number 8, this will blow your minds, okay? Victim number 8 he got convicted on 5 counts involving so-called number 8, which doesn't have a date. It doesn't have a victim who testified. It doesn't have a contemporaneous report. It doesn't even have a witness. The only witness was a hearsay witness because the original witness allegedly had dementia and couldn't testify.
Right.
Except we learned
it's the janitor, right?
The janitor, yeah. Except we learned after the trial that the janitor with dementia had been interviewed by the prosecution and 3 times in this interview said it was not Jerry Sandusky that he saw. The prosecution clearly saw that and said, guess what, sir? You have dementia because you didn't give us our proper answer. Wow. That's the definition of dementia in this case, giving the wrong answer for the prosecution. That alone right there should have people going crazy over, wait a minute, that's an insane, even if he was guilty, that's an insane conviction.
See, the problem is you never know if somebody's guilty or not. It's supposed to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And I don't know how you get to beyond a reasonable doubt unless you just allow emotion to dictate and say, I have to right this wrong.
Exactly. And the whole community, Glenn, was being accused of enabling a pedophile.
Right.
People had pitchforks and torches outside, almost literally outside of the courthouse. It happened 7 months after the arrest. And more importantly, not only did Joe Paterno get fired, he died.
Right.
So Jerry's the pedophile who not only destroyed Penn State football and got him fired, he killed Santa Claus.
Right.
I mean, this is all, there was not one continuance, by the way, which never happens in a case like this. The whole thing is a massive rush to judgment, and now everyone's making up a narrative to bolster it.
More in just a second. I will tell you, we're going to be doing a special later in the year on a court case that I went through that I've lost all faith in the judicial system. And I settled the case, but I settled under the condition that everything is public. That all records could be open, Amen. All testimony, everything could be sealed. I didn't want it sealed. I wanted it open for the public to see. And we're going to be showing you some of the things that will make you question, does justice exist in America? Now, I don't know about this case, but if there's an innocent man and the taxpayers of Pennsylvania paying money to people they shouldn't be paying money to, there's a massive injustice. And I don't know about you, but I want justice to actually stand. I want one time for somebody to listen to the little guy who's screaming out and saying injustice, injustice, and not being railroaded by the media and by attorneys and everybody else, by political correctness. I don't know if it's this case, but I'm listening to John because I know he's lost almost everything and he doesn't want this case. And I have felt that burden. I still feel that burden to tell the truth because no one else will.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK. We're with John Ziegler. We're talking about the Penn State scandal in a whole different way that I'm not sure how I feel about yet, but it's an amazing take you have on it.
A lot of people are probably wondering, why did this happen? Why? I mean, yeah. Joe Paterno's a beloved character. First of all, why did the media go after him? And you kind of have a theory about that, don't you?
100%. That part of what drove this original firestorm is the fact that the liberal media loved destroying a goody-two-shoes conservative like Joe Paterno, who had an awful relationship with the media because he knew what morons they were his whole life.
Makes sense.
That enlightens a lot.
It
because
sure
Paterno was a lifelong conservative.
Absolutely. Good friend with the Bushes.
Yeah. And they hated him for that.
Ugh.
That is I will tell you, that is, I've seen it, but to throw someone in jail for the rest of their life is different. Let's continue that here in a second.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK, taking your phone calls now. We have John Ziegler with us for a few more minutes, and he's talking about the Penn State scandal in a whole different way. Basically, everybody you think is guilty is innocent, and he really believes it and wants somebody to prove him wrong because he would like this burden of an innocent man in prison off of his plate.
Please.
But it's not just you who thinks there's been a very odd look at this. You released recently, exclusively, mm-hmm. yes. is my understanding, a report done by the federal government. Can you yes. talk about this?
This is amazing. In a normal case, this would be big news. Mm-hmm. But all the bets are off. All the rules are off on this particular case. This week, and you can find it at framingpaterno.com, through Dan Abrams' website, Law News, I released a federal report done by a Federal Investigative Services special agent by the name of John Sneden, who investigated the entire Penn State situation after the story broke in November 2011, because Graham Spanier, who's going on trial next week, had a top secret, and a very top secret security clearance with the federal government. By the way, no one really knows why, but
he's the
president of Penn State. It was weird, but okay. So the federal government, after that scandal breaks, decides we need to investigate this to see whether or not he should keep his top secret security clearance. 6-month investigation finds zero reason for him not to have the security clearance renewed. It is renewed. The special agent is positive there was no cover-up. He believes that Sandusky is likely innocent. And I released the full report. It's 110 pages. It's, if you understand the case, it's stunning, especially since Louis Free, who did the famous Free report, which mm-hmm. is credited for so-called proving the cover-up, even though it doesn't do anything of the sort. Louis Free, former FBI director, is told about this. Now, you would think, as an FBI director, having the FIS conclude that Graham Spanier's security clearance should be renewed would have alarm bells go off. Free ignores it, doesn't even put it in his report. Why? Because it completely contradicts the conclusions he needed to come to. Why did he need to come to them? Because he was being paid millions of dollars by people at Penn State who needed an explanation for why Joe Paterno had been fired. Because firing Joe Paterno was essentially like destroying the entire history of a huge portion of the university, of Penn State University. And there was no explanation for it because, ironically enough, the number one thing people don't understand about Joe Paterno's element in this case, Joe Paterno is why Jerry Sandusky got arrested. Without Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky's playing golf in Florida today. And yet he's the guy who gets his legacy destroyed because of the media being a bunch of frickin' morons.
And we haven't talked much about Paterno, which obviously is the Framing Paterno is your site, right? So it was, you kind of started there.
Assuming that Sandusky was
guilty, exactly.
But Paterno was innocent. Most people think you have a poll about 45% of Americans actually believe Joe Paterno may have been a child molester.
Yes.
Jeez.
I believe that.
Now that's incredible because he wasn't even accused of being a child molester.
No, I know, but because of the
you
firing.
You believe the people right. believe it, not that he was a child
correct.
Molester.
Correct. Because of the firing.
Right,
yes.
Right. No, so, I commissioned that poll. We spent a lot of money on that. It was a legitimate scientific poll of nationwide. And yeah, we found that the huge portion of people thought incorrectly that Joe Paterno
I'm
had been accused
it's not
of child
more,
molestation.
To be honest, but, I mean, they tore down the statue and everything.
And you, right, yeah. No, right. And you might have more on this in the poll, but I think a lot of people believe Joe Paterno heard about this, wanted to protect Penn State, wouldn't report it to anyone because he didn't want to, you know, screw the reputation of the university and the football team.
It makes no sense.
Or him, or his own name.
However, he did report it.
He did, absolutely.
Can you go through that scenario for people who don't remember?
He's the one who told the athletic director and the head of the campus police, oh, by the way, Mike McQuarrie came to tell me something that made him feel uncomfortable. You should talk to McQuarrie. And by the way, McQuarrie doesn't get an open job at the time. If there had been a cover-up here, what do you do with the only witness in a cover-up? So, you give him an open job. He was a lowly grad assistant.
And that
at the
actually
time.
Came out that he did report it. And then the response from
and
the
didn't
media.
Get the, did it was it used in the trial that he also didn't get the job?
The problem, Glenn, is McQuarrie got the date, the month, and the year wrong. So when all this matters, no one's connecting those dots. Because we think it's happening in 2002 when it actually was 2001. By the way, who forgets something, whether it happened? Gee, did that rape I see happen before 9/11 or after 9/11? Come on.
Yeah, it's a pretty big divide.
That is a big divide.
That's absurd.
What about the case, though, that people will bring up? They'll say, look, yes, he reported it. But Joe Paterno ran that university. He was the man. Uh-huh. If he wanted to follow up on these serious allegations, okay. He could have. He should have been all over this. He should have been asking for updates right. daily. Why didn't he do any of that?
Well, first of all, we're not sure that that's not what happened. But second of all, there was nothing to update on. First of all, Jerry wasn't his employee. You need, the number one thing you need to understand here is Jerry's retired. I mean, if after you leave the Blaze, right. you get
Let's
accused.
Use Jeffy as an example.
Okay. After Jeffy leaves, he gets accused of child molestation. What is Glenn Beck's incentive to cover that up? I mean, there's none.
Right.
It doesn't exist. By the way, Paterno and Sandusky weren't even close. They didn't like each other.
Wait. There would be an incentive for me to cover that up.
How?
Because if I'm in the business of attracting young adults to come, or young right. kids to come to my studios.
But he's not with you anymore.
I know, but do I not have enough common sense to keep a child molester out?
So you would rather get accused of covering up for a child molester than having an ex-employee turn out to be a child molester?
No, I would just want it to go away.
You'd want to distance yourself.
I just want it to go away. It's not a problem anymore. Just make it go away.
Right, well, it's inconsistent with 61 years of Joe Paterno's life. 61 years. And it's also important to point out that just before this had happened, this is important for context. I realize context is dead. But just before the McQuarrie episode happens, there was a quarterback by the name of Rashard Casey at Penn State who was accused of beating up a police officer. The media tortured Paterno for sticking by Rashard Casey because they thought, he's lost his way. His morals are gone. He's sticking by this guilty quarterback who beat up a police officer. Turned out Casey was innocent and got a seven-figure settlement from the police in New Jersey for a story that was made up about him, and Paterno was right to stand by him.
That was reported everywhere, like the other.
No, but so then this happens literally right before this. So Paterno has a history of not throwing people under the bus if there's no evidence that they're guilty. And I'm convinced, because I know that Joe Paterno's son, Jay Paterno, who was an assistant coach at the time, and who doesn't have the guts to say it publicly, but he told me privately, I'm positive that he knows that Jerry is innocent. Unfortunately, he doesn't run the show within the family because the other brother, Scott Paterno, was Joe's lawyer at the time, and Scott has his head up his butt and has a huge investment in Sandusky's guilt because he got duped. That son got duped at the beginning of this story. And if he's wrong, it's all his fault because he gave bad advice about how to handle this. That's the germ of how this whole thing starts. They get duped into thinking it's real. People forget, Jerry hadn't been around the program for 10 years. Scott Paterno didn't know Jerry Sandusky from Glenn Beck. In fact, he probably knows he's a conservative, so he probably knew you a lot better than he knew Jerry Sandusky. And so he's going on hearsay and thinking, oh, my gosh, this is horrible. We need to protect ourselves from this, get away from it as far as possible. When it was all nothing. There was nothing.
What do you expect to happen now? You've spent a lot of time, a lot of money.
Well, this Graham Spanier is on trial next week, which is why I'm one of the major reasons why I'm here this week. He's a very good man who is on trial for his freedom, and he's innocent. I'm 110% positive that he's innocent, and we'll see whether or not a jury who the jury pool was very polluted in this, incredibly polluted in this case. I believe the judge is biased. I know the media is 100% biased. It'll be an interesting test of the judicial system. I suspect he might get convicted.
What's he on trial for?
On pure emotion, for conspiracy and child endangerment. And there is no case. There's no evidence. There's no logic to it. But here's what if the first 5.5 years of the story are any indication, Glenn, I think there's not been one good thing that's happened in this whole situation, except for Joe Paterno getting his win record back and the sanctions against Penn State being removed sooner than they were planned on being removed because they were absurd to begin with. I'm a cynic to begin with, but I am very pessimistic. I think Jerry Sandusky is going to die in prison, an innocent man in a horrendous, horrible death. And I think that the real story of this case is going to be lost forever because the news media is broken, completely, totally broken. And this case shows it in so many different ways because we don't have enough time for this case. Who else is going to put 3 hours like you guys have, or almost 3 hours, into this case? And that's what it takes to get to the bottom of this. In fact, we've only hit the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, right.
And so we don't live in a world where context and details can matter. It's emotion. It's headlines. This case is all about headlines. Headlines are all that matter now. And unfortunately, I don't want to live in a world where only headlines matter, especially when the headline writers are morons who have an agenda. But that's the world we're living in. And that's, by the way, how we got Donald Trump as president. I mean, it really is. It's all
connected.
It had
to come back to this.
You're
saying,
also saying that the headlines for The Sun are wrong, right? I mean, kind of.
What?
Yes.
Jeff Sandusky, one of the adopted sons, was recently charged with a crime that sounds a lot like
it sure does.
What Jerry was accused
sure
of.
Sure sounds except, like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Well, first of all, he's adopted, but second of all, that's not what he's accused of. I don't know if he's innocent or guilty. But he's accused of something completely different. He's accused of sending text messages to the teenage daughters of his longtime girlfriend. Yet the headlines are, Sandusky's son charged with child sex abuse. Well, what he did, if it's true, I think it's horrible, and I hope he gets convicted. It's completely irrelevant to this case. It happened when Jerry was in a maximum security prison. So how Jerry would be remotely involved in this, I don't know. But the important part about Jeff Sandusky you need to know is Jeff's as positive as anybody that Jerry is innocent. In fact, he has tattooed on his arm, after the scandal breaks, after Jerry's convicted, Sandusky forever. Because it's a message to his former adopted brother, Matt, who temporarily changed his name after becoming a Jerry accuser from Matt Sandusky to Matt Davidson until he realized, guess what, the media doesn't care about Matt Davidson, so I'm going back to Matt Sandusky because I want to be a celebrity sex abuse victim. And so he gets tattooed. Wow. He gets tattooed Sandusky forever. That, to me, is the most important thing you need to know about Jeff Sandusky relevant to this particular case.
I will tell you this. You've made some amazing statements.
Okay.
Well, that's an understatement.
Yeah. I mean, if you're right.
I am.
This is a massive injustice, and it shows how sick our society is, being motivated by money and pop entertainment, and how sick our judicial system really is.
Real important last point, though.
And media.
People, a lot of the people in this story thought they were doing the right thing. A lot of the accusers thought they were helping put a monster away, and oh, by the way, it's going to help me, too. See, once everyone thinks there's a Loch Ness Monster, then everyone's got to get the Loch Ness Monster. That's when people become really dangerous. When they know what they're doing is corrupt, when they mistakenly think what they're doing is just. And the same thing happened to the prosecutors, the same thing happened to the media. Everyone thinks they're fighting the monster.
That's why you said when the four that testify, the mother calls and says, this thing is going to be... This is going to be thrown out if they don't get more victims.
As a reporter.
Right.
That's when three others, all friends, stand up because they all believe.
Well, they've been coerced by investigators. In fact, there was audio recordings proving this, that they thought they were mistaken. They thought they had turned the recorder off. This was played in trial. They thought they had turned the recorder off, but it was actually on, and the investigators are blatantly lying to the victim to get him to say what they want. Blatantly.
In what way?
They were telling him things that weren't true. In fact, the lawyer said, hey, can we tell him that we have all these other accusers that didn't exist at that time so we can get him to talk? And they say, oh, sure, we do this all the time. This is all on tape. They thought the recorder was off. The media played it in like paragraph 6 and, oh, isn't this funny that they thought the recording was off? I mean, that's how crazy this case is.
Well, okay. Thank you very much, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
The Glenn Beck Program.
See, that's the secret there. We're on to something more important than this innocent man in jail thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
milkshakes from McDonald's.
Yeah, we have the new chocolate shamrock.
Shamrock shakes.
Mm, we're trying.
Pretty delicious, except I contend that that's not actually...
Yeah, don't make the mistake of looking up the ingredients.
Why?
The ingredient number one is whole milk.
Yeah,
number
two. Read the third one.
Sucrose.
Non-fat milk.
The third one? You mean
cream?
Cream is the third number.
Okay, fourth thing.
Non-fat milk solids.
No, I don't want any non-fat milk solids.
I don't
solids.
Know what Why a not? Non-fat milk solid is.
That doesn't make it bad.
Is that like a piece of the udder? What is that?
If it's in with the shake,
it's like
cares?
You throw in a little
Stop
bit of hoof.
Yeah, yeah, I don't even know.
A little bit of
I don't know if you've noticed this, but no part of the milk is solid ever.
What it turns into cheese, it is. right? There's a process that
I don't want cheese in my milkshake.
If it's a cheesecake shake, a strawberry cheesecake shake, I'd like those.
Well, now, okay, now wait a minute. Hang on just a second. Cheesecake shake? I mean, bad.
I eat it, but this isn't that.
Mercury.